Hello again, everybody, and this is David Collins with BitNote. We'll be playing great video game music, so stay tuned and listen to some great relaxing sounds from some pretty cool puzzle games that I like a lot. Have a listen. Welcome all the listeners, and I hope you really enjoy the show I've got lined up for you now. So one other thing, type of game that I really like is puzzle games. They are fun, they challenge you, you go through weird circumstances, and you just try to get through to the end, and it's a real challenge. And if you beat the puzzle, you go hooray. So I've got two pretty cool puzzle games lined up for the show. They're both similar in a couple of ways. They're both first person, they're both pretty challenging and tricky in their own way, and they're both not Portal or Portal 2, which I've covered on previous shows, just in case either of you were expecting them. I start out with a pretty classic one that really takes your mind in some weird places called Antichamber. And before I even go into detail, I think I'll just play the beginning track from that. And this is a very ambient track. It's very relaxing, and a lot of these things are meant to play in the background while you're solving puzzles. And to be honest, some of these tracks are even like 14 minutes long, so I can't really play all of them or even a few of them. But even though this is a slightly lengthy track, I think it's pretty relaxing, and I think you'll enjoy it too. So have a listen. This is from Antichamber. It is called Beginnings 1, and it is by Siddhartha Barnhorn. So have a listen. And that was Beginnings 1, composed by Siddhartha Barnhorn from Antechamber by Alexander Bruce. As you can see, the music is very relaxing, ambient, and also involves almost naturalistic sound. And it's kind of in contrast to the actual world of Antechamber, which is geometric, very blatant. It's the world of Antechamber is almost like clinical, and they're flat floors, flat ceilings, everything's white. It's not quite portal level, because at least it looked like the portal level looks like it's constructed. But the Antechamber world looks like it's just a mathematical formulated place with clear blocks, clear strong lighting, and the whole thing just looks very geometrical and pristine and everything, like it exists beyond our world. And I think that's exactly what the developer was going for. It's very much an indie game, but it's more of a labor of love. Alexander Bruce was developing this game for several years, and the concept changed time and time again, starting out as an early, you know, development of a development of like Quake and stuff, and he just kept evolving it, changing the engine until finally he had the game he had. I really admire guys like this who can like stay on the same project for a long period of time, because even though I have developed a game myself, it is long-term attention to a given project is not something that I can ever really do or at all that easily. But he kept at it, and through the meandering and the changes and everything, he created something that's pretty unique. And even in the game itself, there's even a nice little gallery that shows screenshots of his progress over the years, which I thought was pretty nice. But, so what is Antechamber? What's it about? Well, you find yourself in a room, and you're looking at a wall, and the wall actually contains your instructions and menus. There's no, like, menu coming up. There's no, like, if you want to adjust the volume, you click on this volume thing on this wall. It's all very strange. You don't know how you got there, or particularly why you're there, or what you're meant to be doing there. And as such, the limbo rule applies, which I discussed earlier. I.e., if the beginning is minimalist and unsure and cryptic, then the ending will likely also be minimalist, unsure, and cryptic. So the attention should really be in enjoying the parts in between, rather than getting too worked up about what everything is about. Which, honestly, you could do if you like thought exercises and, you know, ruminations, but there you actually go. So you find yourself in this strange room, and you find out that there's a map on one side of the room that'll get you to various points, but only points you've already explored. So you click on the map, you find yourself there, you walk around, and maybe you end up back or whatever, and by pressing escape you can return to the room. And essentially you find yourself in a very weird location. You try to explore it, but none of the pieces always match up. The whole gameplay is non-Euclidean, essentially. This means that if you were to go 10 meters forward, 10 meters to the side, 10 meters back, and then 10 meters to the opposite side, you would not necessarily end up back where you began. Indeed, you might actually look at a cube, and if you look at one side of the cube, you might see one thing in it, and if you look at another side of the cube, you might see another thing in it. The whole game is kind of a head wrecker, and it also gets like, you know, those TV shows where, you know, they're trying to escape from a place, so they open a door, walk down the corridor, and at the end of the corridor they open a door and then suddenly open it to find themselves back in the room they just left. You know, it doesn't make any geographical sense, but that's kind of what this game is about. It's all about geographical stuff that doesn't make any sense, and you have to try to make sense of it. Try to make your way through the environment to try to deal with all the weird contradictions and the fact you keep, like, walking back into the, you know, that walking in this direction might end up you in a completely different direction. And it's weird because you actually have to develop a sense of navigation in a world that doesn't obey traditional rules of navigation. It's tricky enough. On the side of that, there's also a bunch of block puzzles in a weird way. You get this gun part of the way through the game, and the gun, rather than causing any harm or injury to any living beings, it actually takes up blocks and puts down blocks. Small little cubey things, you know, size you could hold in your hand. And you can, like, shoot these blocks, and when it hits a wall or a surface, it'll just stick there, and that's fine. And you suddenly realize that these become a vast part of the gameplay, because sometimes there are lasers which you have to break with the blocks, or sometimes you flip a switch that makes a door come up, but you have to put a block to stop the door from falling back down. And that sounds like the simple mechanics of it, but it gets far more complicated to the point you're actually, basically, you throw a block, you make a door come up, you find another block, and you make make that cause another door to come up. But then you decide you want to backtrack in order to get the block. So you take the second block, you wedge it into the first door. Then you grab the and while the door is wedged open, you grab the first block. Then you go back through the wedged open door and grab the second block on your way out. So it's like, you know, you're going forward with the puzzles and just suddenly realize, wait a sec, there's a different way I could be doing it. And you go back and forward and everything. There's so many different combinations and permutations and everything that's going on with all the blocks and all the things you're doing with your gun and all the trying to progress. And one of the nice things about the game is that, you know, you're not stuck in a regimented set of levels. I mean, it's not linear, so to speak. You can usually there's one pretty famous part in the game that's symbolized by a little metronome going back and forth that has three different passages out of it. Well, four if you count just diving down this great deep pit. And that's allows the in the game you can just explore things at your own pace, go in your own direction, find your own ways. And there are even a couple of parts of the game that actually, you know, you don't need to actually go into them to win the game, but you end up finding cool stuff. Like I said, that bit where I saw the history of the game, but there's a couple of other pretty neat bits in it as well. So Antichamber is a pretty good game. Like I said, it's got a very ambient soundtrack and very relaxing. If you'd like, the soundtrack is available online in Bandcamp. It's by Siddhartha Barnhorn. And as I said, there's a couple more tracks I could play from that game, but it's a very, very, very long, you know, some of the pieces are just very, very long. So I'll just move on from now. But yes, it's Antichamber, quite surreal, quite head-wrecking, but kind of fun. Oh, and there's also a bunch of affirmations written on all the walls, but I didn't quite go for them, but who cares, it was a good game. Alright, so I think I'll move on from one puzzle game that had you in cryptic and unusual surroundings to another that had you in slightly more sane but still fairly cryptic surroundings. That's kind of a hallmark of puzzle games, after all. If you're not actually trying to solve a everything made sense and was completely solvable from the get-go, there'd be no puzzle to solve. And that's the whole challenge of puzzle games, isn't it? It's like trying to just figure them out, just go through it, trying to take what you know, take a step forward, try to figure this out and look at something. And then you got those wonderful puzzles where you're looking at it from ages and you shake your head, or maybe you're on the go to the toilet or something, and suddenly, yes, you see it a whole new light. And I think that's what a good puzzle game is. You know, it challenges you, it makes you think, and you make progress in the process. So what I've got for you now is music from a game called Safecracker. And boy, do I love games that are what it says in the tin. If you recall, I played music from a previous... Well, actually, I didn't play music from a previous game called Safecracker because I didn't actually like the music from the previous Safecracker. And in fact, I thought it would actually cause injury to the ears of my listeners if I played a game from that. But that was a 1997 game called Safecracker. But there was a spiritual successor, which sometimes it's called Safecracker 2. So it's, I guess, a sequel, called Safecracker: The Ultimate Puzzle Adventure, which was released in 2006. In both games, it does what it says in the tin. You are in a place that has a lot of safes, and you must crack the safes. And rather than doing silly things like putting on a stethoscope and listening to the clinks, or researching various flaws, or looking up internet forums for the various vulnerabilities of whatever safe you're trying to crack, instead of that, all safes are instead secured with a puzzle. It being said that I believe any aspiring thief would not wish to open a safe with a puzzle in it because it would take them too long, or whatever. So, each game you have a whole set of safes you've got open, and there's a threadbare story that carries you along. Before I get into that, I think I'll just play the main theme of this game. Have a listen. Thank you. And what you just heard there was the main theme from Safecracker, the ultimate puzzle adventure. It was composed by Joshua Orr Mosley, who's done a lot of who's done music for other games such as Explosion Man, which I haven't actually played, but you know, I've heard about, and a few other music things for other stuff like TVs and films and stuff. And the actual game was composed by Kyop Studio, which is a different studio from Dreamcatcher Interactive, who made the first one. So I'm not actually sure how the whole rights thing with the Safecracker name went through the whole thing, but you know, there you go. So, Safecracker, the ultimate puzzle adventure. In the first game, you essentially were trying to get a job at a safecracking company, so they put you into their office buildings late at night, and you had to find your employment contract, which was locked up in a safe. So just do it by figuring out how to open the various combinations. Sometimes it'd be pretty straightforward. For instance, it would be a sliding block puzzle, which are, you know, of course, are always nice. Or sometimes it'd be you'd find an item somewhere around the... you'd find an item in one safe that would help you open into another. So they're all interdependent. In one case, you managed to find a dictaphone and used it to open up a voice-activated safe. So that was pretty straightforward. There was a lot of variety in the puzzles, and the environment was very gorgeously rendered. It seemed like it was an office building technically, but the whole thing was like a very beautiful mansion. So it had like a very nice kitchen and stuff where you had to figure out, convert between Celsius, Fahrenheit and Kelvin in order to open up another puzzle. And just there was also a nice showroom with polished marble and a music room with piano, and the whole thing felt very elegant and opulent. In fact, there was even, I think, a Botticelli painting that was pretty essential to solving one of your the puzzles in the game. So it kind of gives you a sense of, you know, how gorgeous the surroundings were. The sequel, Safecracker, the Ultimate Puzzle Adventure, doesn't quite do that. In fact, to be honest, it was kind of harsh on the game. A lot of the corridors just seem very plain and very structured. A lot of the rooms just seem like, you know, empty squares with a couple of props done around. There is a really nice fountain, though, in the center, and I really did like that bit. But the plot is actually kind of different. This time, a great big wealthy million or billionaire has died, and to confuse his entire family, he's left the will in a safe somewhere in his house. And, of course, he loves safes and he loves puzzles, so you can see where this is going. So you've been contracted by the family to essentially go through, open all the safes, get the will, and just let it be given to them. And that way, you know, so you're basically this... You sound British. I always imagine you as one of those guys with the moustache and, like, you know, like a sort of like a cat burglar sort of character. That's just how I imagine the guy. It's all from first person. So you're walking around this environment and you're solving the puzzles. I like this game a lot because there were a decent selection of puzzles and a lot of them were pretty challenging and stuff. And one of the fun things I found about the game was that I managed to get through the whole game finally without looking up at a walkthrough. And this is kind of a pretty big thing from video games, because puzzle games can be so infuriating for one simple reason. You can get stuck. The dreaded S-T-U-C-K that just is highlighted there in great big bold letters. And it happens to everyone. Each puzzle you encounter, there's a possibility you won't be able to quite get through it. Or maybe you're just stuck. Maybe your mind just doesn't quite work in that way. Maybe you're missing something that's obvious. In the most infuriating times of puzzles, there might be a whole room that you solve a puzzle and you're missing. And you just glance over some small detail or some pen like you're meant to pick up from a table to solve a puzzle. Those things are really infuriating because it's not even about intelligence, it's more about just observation, which is a slightly different skill. So the whole thing with any puzzle game is if you get stuck, you suddenly feel that thing of, what do I do now? I don't know what to do. And this was a thing in classic adventure games as well as, you know, any sort of modern or classic puzzle game. Because you've got a whole challenge, you've got to figure out what to do, and you just don't know what to do with. So the ideal thing that people do these days is look up online for a walkthrough and try to get through, and that's pretty good. In the classic days, we didn't have that. I remember, like, for instance, trying to solve Monkey Island 2 and going to my friends at school saying, how do I solve this puzzle? And then they ended up giving me a solution to that puzzle and the puzzle several ones in advance. So I kind of ruined a bit of parts of the game, but don't worry, no harm, actually. It was still a fun game, and I was kind of struggling. But the point is, if you can solve the puzzle yourself without any help or without any things, then it feels so good because you feel you've learned, you feel you've applied yourself, and you feel you've pushed forward with it. But the slight problem, of course, is that you know, if you really want to solve it properly, you have to realize that sometimes you have to walk away from the game. And that's something that a lot of game developers don't want you doing. If the best way to solve a puzzle is to walk away, think it through, and suddenly have an idea come to you later on, then you're sort of in that situation where, you know, especially in modern day culture, you can be distracted by a million different things. And so by the time you get back to the... So you mightn't even return to the puzzle game. You'll just start playing a mobile phone game or something else. And you won't have that thing percolating through your head and trying to get back to it. So that's the reason why modern games don't have many puzzles or have very, very simplistic puzzles which are easy to get through. And all the really hard ones, like the classic like PC puzzle games that were like of the 90s, like Myst and games like that, which of course Safecracker owes a debt to, were really popular, but it would involve people like really trying to apply themselves, but just getting stuck, and maybe they might leave the game, and especially the casual audience, which is always much bigger than the hardcore, you know, maybe they wouldn't even approach the game in the first place. So it makes puzzle games a tricky proposition, because there's always going to be those dedicated people who love it, but even they might get stuck and get frustrated. So why create a game that causes frustration? But the answer is because when they manage to get through that frustration, suddenly they're exhilarated. And that same thing happened to me. I was playing Safecracker, the ultimate puzzle adventure, and there was this one puzzle I just couldn't get. I was able to figure out that he opened up the panel and exposed a bunch of wires, but I couldn't figure out how to do with the wires. They're all different colors, and I wasn't sure whether to rewire it or change it around or click on the right connections or follow the path of the wires to know which key combination to press. And I just remember one time just looking it back, just after being stuck, leaving the game for days, even weeks, coming back to it, and suddenly I looked at it and it was right there in front of me, the solution. It was so straightforward, so easy, so in plain sight. But I didn't see it right then, and it needed some time. And it's, but when I finally did, it was like, of course. I was like seeing the world in a new way. And that's what a good puzzle game does. It really, really challenges you. It keeps you going. And it makes you feel like you're pinning yourself. You're setting a challenge for yourself. And if you succeed in it, you feel a great sense of exhilaration. So, So those are puzzle games as well, of course. Safecracker, but unlike Portal. Sorry, like Antichamber, but unlike Portal. Safecracker is also you progress through the environment at your own pace in your own time. And that's one of the nice things about it, because it's... you know, you're not stuck in one puzzle. That's another thing about these games that games like Portal don't have. In Portal, you solve a puzzle and go on to the next one. But in these games, you know, you can sometimes leave a puzzle unsolved for now and just solve another puzzle in the game. And games like that always make it easier. So on that note, I think I'll leave you guys all now. I'll leave you with the credits theme of Safecracker, The Ultimate Puzzle Adventure, which of course was also composed by Joshua Orr Mosley and developed by Hyop Studio. It's a pity. I think Hyop Studio is closed down now, but that's a pity. And it was published by the Adventure Game Company, which of course, just by their name, sounds pretty cool. They publish a lot of games like Nance Dew and Hardy Boys and all this sort of stuff. So with that, I'll leave you. I hope you've enjoyed your time on the show, and I think puzzle games are still pretty cool. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.